This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Off we go. Here we go. My name is, let's see, how do I usually start? Welcome. I start with welcome. Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Ginny Urich. I'm the founder of 1000 Hours Outside, and I have two amazing and very pertinent guests here today from Birds and Bees, Mary Flo Ridley and Megan Michelson. Welcome.
Thank you. We're excited to be here.
We are so excited to be here.
So glad to have you. What we're going to be talking about, so parents can make the choice if they listen to this one on their own, if they let their kids listen to this one. But we talk about teaching our kids about their bodies and intimate things today. So you can make that choice at this moment if this is one you want to have your kids sitting with you, or if you want to listen to it on your own. What's interesting to me about the topic of teaching our kids about the birds and the bees, which is a saying that's been around for a long time, is that I think nature really facilitates this topic. And I actually think that's partially what's meant to happen, is that kids, as they get older and they're outside, they start to notice things. Even at the zoo, we've had all sorts of conversations pop up due to nature, due to animals and different things that people see. So can you tell us about birds and bees and when it got started?
Well, it got started when I was a young mother. So that was back in 1986. And I had kids asking questions. So it was a combination of them asking, but also my upbringing, which was a very happy outside, come in when the lights turn on life. I really didn't know if I could answer those questions, because even though my parents were very relational and conversational, they never said anything about sex. So they didn't answer my questions and I didn't know if I could. So that sent me on a journey, and that journey led to a curriculum that would allow for parents of young children and not just wait for the one talk at the awkward age, instead to break down into pieces all that information you want them to have, and you start answering when they're asking. Because you're right, they're going to see things in nature, they're going to see things in life, they're going to have a teacher that's expecting a baby or another one is coming in their own home, and they're curious. And so for parents to be equipped and encouraged to answer those questions at an early age.
Mm. So Mary Flo, you said something that was really interesting. You said your parents were relational, they were conversational, you had this happy childhood. Have you ever asked them, or have you just wondered and come up with an answer on your own, why they didn't talk about this?
Well, what's hilarious is that I did this work for 10 years before I told my parents.
Okay. 10 years, a whole decade.
We lived in different cities, and it was like, as a result of the fact that we could not talk about this, I could not say, I teach parents how to talk to their kids about sex. I couldn't say the word in front of them. It wasn't until I spoke in their city that I said, okay, you need to know. So
surprise.
It was surprise. And then I said, do you want to come and hear me speak? No. They were just very private about it. Mm-hmm. I think if I were to guess, they did it out of a sense of protection, mm-hmm. protecting mm-hmm. me from things that I didn't need to know about. This is not uncommon. You know, if you ask in one of our audiences, how many parents never said anything, many, many hands go up. But if we grew up on the farm, we would have.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You have to. You have to have those conversations. Yeah. And I think you naturally learn about body parts and things like that, too. So, for instance, we learned years ago, we were at a little farm just visiting, and the mother pig was giving birth. We learned there that the pig has two uteruses. And so there's usually an even number of piglets. It's such an interesting, fascinating conversation. So the farm and this outdoor life does tend to naturally give way to those conversations. But I certainly grew up in the suburbs. And so, you know, a lot of that stuff happens at school or different things like that. Okay, so this has been going on for decades. You're speaking at different places. You're speaking around the country. Megan, tell us where you enter the picture.
So I entered the picture very early on entered the picture, probably 12 years ago now. I was teaching middle school here in Dallas, which is where we both live. So as a middle school teacher, I was just kind of, I didn't have children of my own yet. I was newlywed, and I was just kind of a little shocked, I guess, at how sexualized my little students were and just their little world that they were being raised in. So I was just kind of had my radar up, like, gosh, this seems like a lot coming at them. And so one day I was passing out papers to go home to the parents, and this little flyer says, "Parents, learn how to talk to your kids about sex with Mary Flo Ridley." And I so happened to grow up with the Ridley family. One of her daughters is one of my good friends, and had no idea that Mrs. Ridley, this lovely lady, was a sex educator. So I look at this paper, I'm like, what? God.
This is really
funny. I was like, I have got to hear what Mary Flo has to say. But also as a teacher, just like, I want to hear from my own, like through the lens of a middle school teacher. And so I go that night and I walk away and I was blown away. And I remember thinking, leaving that night, just being like, wow, if every parent could talk to their kids about sex in this way, middle school could look so different. And even bigger picture, marriages could look so different. Like we as a culture, particularly a Christian culture, but we as a culture in general are not talking about sex in healthy ways. So that was just the beginning of kind of this gong, I guess, in my heart of like, everyone's got to hear this. And then a few years go by, I hear her again once I had become a mother. And then another year or two go by and just kind of ran into her daughter over, We lived out of the country for a hot second. And so I had flown home to give birth to my second child and I ran into her daughter. And she kind of said, you know, my mom kind of wants to step back a bit, but I don't want to take over. And neither does my sister because this is weird work. And I just kind of said, you know, I think I want to. So we met and we started talking and we both were kind of like,
this is awesome.
At the time, it was just a speaking business. We actually moved home we were in Peru, but we moved home about 6 months after that for good. And once we were home, I started training under her. And so I would go to all of her speaking events that were local and just sit in the back with my little pen and paper and just take notes. And I probably heard it,
who knows,
so many times, and just notes and notes and notes. And so then we started kind of splitting the speaking stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what's tricky with that, which is amazing to hear someone live. It's very special. I think it's a really unique thing, but it's limiting. So you can't necessarily take your message to the masses. You can't take your message around the world because that's a limiting engagement. You're in a certain location. There's only a certain amount of tickets to sell. And so at some point you made an online course. Tell us about when that happened.
This is really exciting. It was filmed in November of 2019. And we really thought, you know, sometimes we're invited places we can't go. And so, you know what? Let's get this all online. We also have
the internet.
Yes.
So novel.
There is this www. let's put things up. We filmed it in November. It was all edited and ready to go. And it also comes with a discussion guide. So we reprogrammed that so it could be digital and online. And everything was tied with a bow and ready to go at the end of January 2020. Well,
I think it's then? February 2020.
It was May. Yeah, it was like, so maybe the 40 or so speaking events we had on the books went away.
Oh, wow.
Nobody is going to go anywhere, and schools aren't going to have events. Churches aren't going to have events. So those disappeared, and we're like, guess what? We've got this online course. So Megan, who was running our Instagram account, talk about going around the world, she started talking about birds and bees and was a very, very good presence, an amazing presence on Instagram. And that's now our main business is an online course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took a hot second for me to kind of get over the Instagram world. You know, I mean, you're on it, you understand, but it's like, I don't want to do that. You know, like, this is weird. I don't want to talk to this camera all day long every day. And you really put yourself out there. And I'm talking about penises on Instagram. Like, I'm really putting it out there.
In a viral kind of way.
Well, I did too. Let me tell you, very recently, so I was on someone else's podcast. He's actually a pastor. His name's Brian Tome in Cincinnati, and he has a podcast called The Aggressive Life. And so it's kind of edgy. You know, you think of your typical pastor as being like really buttoned up, and he's just like the guy that's out on the motorcycle, that type of guy. And so in the conversation, he had said the word balls about something. And so it was out there. It was like out there in this recording. And there is really interesting information. And I got the statistics a little wrong when I was talking with him, but it's something like, for boys, if they get sun on their back and their chest, it increases their testosterone by 120%, which is pretty significant. I think, like, actually, I raised my boys with those swim shirts, and it really changed my perspective on that. Like, our bodies are meant to get sun. So for boys, if you put the sun, you know, their sun gets on the back and chest, 120% increase in testosterone. And you look back at generations past, right? Like, you always see those pictures of, like, you know, the high schoolers in the gym class, and they're just, like, ripped. Well, then it says if you get the sun on your balls, it increases your testosterone by 200%. 200. So there we go. I mean, we were meant to have a conversation, weren't we? I've literally only put the quote out one time, though, and it was like last year, and then I let it lie. But I said this on this Brian's podcast because he was talking about how actually pastors have the lowest testosterone of so many different career field. So I was like, oh, fit in the conversation. And he'd already said balls. So anyway, but he always takes clips and puts them on the internet. And I was like, do not take this clip and put this one. Don't have this one be the one you chose. And it was just posted the other day. I was like, come on. Yeah. So I get it. I get it in a very small, like a very, people were like, who is this lady?
What are you talking about? Sun and balls.
Yes. You know, so I get it. I get it. It's tricky.
It is tricky, but it also came from a place of kind of our last hope in a way. You know, 2020 was, I had three little kids at home during the lockdown. So it was just like, we weren't doing anything then. I was just like surviving. My baby was 18 months. And so it was just, I was not on Instagram then. But 2021 was the end of 2020. So the next year is when I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. We're going to dive in and give it a shot. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And by the grace of God, it really just like worked out in a really cool way, in a way that surprised me because I am such a people person. It was really surprising of how effective it was and fulfilling. You know, I felt, I do feel like I get on there and I'm talking to people and we're really connecting with people and able to share this information and empowering parents is something that we are really big on. And I really feel that in this crazy world, we're able to do that through Instagram and talk to these parents that are catching them, you know, something quickly on their phone. And we're able to, our whole message at Birds and Bees is to break down the talk, air quotes, and replace it with multiple age appropriate conversations. And I feel like kind of through Instagram, we've been able to do that with the parents too. You know, instead of coming to hear our live thing for an hour and a half, just listen, you know, I kind of do little sound bites here and there, you know, and it's just, I think easier to digest.
Yes.
Because to Mary Flo's parents' point years and years ago, I don't think we've come that far. Where I don't think that many parents are like super comfortable answering, even saying the word uterus, you know, and that one's a pretty safe word, you know, that's not even genitalia. But I think for some parents, it's just not comfortable. And so I think to hear it a little bit at a time, kind of drip, drip, drip is what we say, I think it's really a powerful way to teach parents. And so it's been cool.
She's demonstrating to the parents how this happens with the child. You know, that you can just, and even we have something that we call circle back. Like if Megan says something on Instagram and then she comes, she gets some comments maybe, or she comes back around and says, okay, just to be clear, here's where we were going with that conversation. So that's what we tell parents to do. You're not under the pressure to get it done perfectly the first time because there are going to be a lot of conversations, which if you think there's one conversation, there's too much pressure on the parent to get it right. And so they keep postponing it. They're not ready yet. Well, just get out there and start talking. And when you do feel like, you know, I just didn't explain that very well, you just come back around and explain it again. And so she demonstrates all of the things we're asking parents to do with their children.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It is an overwhelming thought. If it is a one shot, you know, you got one chance to do it. And if you mess it up, then I could see you would avoid until you feel like you've overly prepared and then it's too late. I don't know if too late is even the right thing. That sounds really ominous, but you know, in a way that maybe you've missed some key opportunities to share before kids hear things from friends or other places. Can we circle back, Megan? And this is something that I guess on this podcast, I haven't talked about too much. I don't know if there's been a ton of opportunity, but I also taught middle school and high school. And you said you could not believe how sexualized the students are. Mm-hmm. And I would say the same thing. And I think this is important. You know, there's these areas in life where parents are not privy to, like, what is the vibe? What does this feel like? And so I had an experience. I was teaching way before you. So I was in the 2008. Mm-hmm. The iPhone hadn't come out yet. And I was sitting in a parent meeting with seventh graders. And we were talking about math curriculum because that was my thing. But the police were there too. It was an evening meeting. And I was like, this is bizarre. Like, why are the police here at this meeting to talk to seventh graders? And, you know, I did my spiel on the math. And then the police did their spiel on how the seventh graders were having sex and they were videotaping it on their flip phones. Mm-hmm. And then they were texting it to the entire class. Mm-hmm. And these kids are, I don't know, 12, 11. But, you know, of course, every parent has the response of that wasn't my kid, but I was like, well, it's some of your kids because yeah. that's why the police are here. And even if it's not your kid knows it's happening. That is the way of the environment of middle school. And then in high school, I was in the hallway a lot because I didn't have a classroom. So, I mean, these kids are talking about oral sex. They're drawing vaginas on desks. Mm-hmm. They are talking about who threw up and got choked at this party. And I mean, some of the things I've never even shared publicly because I was like, that, what? Like, mm-hmm. it was so vulgar, some of it. Mm-hmm. And some of it, I don't know, like, I guess that's a judgment call. Is this vulgar or not vulgar? I mean, some of it definitely, I feel like anyone would be like, whoa. And I hear it. So I'm like, every kid is hearing this. So can we pop back? Just can you give parents, Megan, a glimpse? So then you're a teacher here post iPhone. Mm-hmm. What's going on? What's the environment like in the middle school?
So I wasn't too far off from you. I taught from 09 to 2013. So I am no longer teaching.
But so interesting though, because I left, it was like the Blackberries. Mm-hmm. The last year I was in the classroom were the Blackberries. And so the mm-hmm. kids were at that point hiding them in their shirts. They were taking pictures of tests and sending them to friends who had the exam the next hour. So it was already becoming a little bit of an issue, but the kids were videotaping themselves, like I said, on flip phones.
Yeah.
And so I can't even imagine what changed once the iPhone arrived.
And I can't speak into that from obviously I know it has changed everything. I think a specific example that comes to my mind when I was teaching, and this is just looking back now, just also leading me to this work. I didn't know it at the time, but it did. I remember similar situation with you is there was a staff meeting because some of these eighth graders had been sexting, you know, texting with sexual images. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, having this conversation in the staff meeting, and it was like, even the staff was uncomfortable talking about it, and getting the parents involved was just, there was just so much discomfort around this. And the solution in that meeting, I can't remember what it was exactly, but I just felt like everything was so tiptoed and gray, you know? And like, I was kind of like, why aren't we just saying, everyone circle up, sit down. Sexting is this, not okay, because this is not allowed. You know what? Whoever you're sending it to may not have asked for it. So that's not respectful. Oh, and I don't know, maybe it's illegal. And here are the legal ramifications. Police, get in here. This is actually considered, mm-hmm. oh, wait for it, child pornography. And these are the, you know, the legal ramifications of it. So I remember sitting in that meeting just being so shocked, like, why aren't we talking about this? Was kind of like my, what was me feeling impassioned inside me. And so I think mm-hmm. that very much aligns with what we do. And we say this to parents a lot because so much of our curriculum focuses on parents of young kids and talking about seeds and the way things grow and just building these foundations for conversations. But we also talk a little bit more about when your kids enter into this world, you know, and be that parent that says something. So if your sixth grader comes home and probably won't say anything to you, but if you know the seventh graders at that school just got busted from something, be the parent that says something. Oh, mm-hmm. sweetheart, I heard what happened in seventh grade. Why do you think that happened? Do you know what this is? How do you think she felt? How do you think he felt? Wow. Okay. Do you understand why this is really dangerous and not healthy? Be the parent that speaks up. Mm-hmm. The world is shouting, sending very clear messages about sex, and most of them are incorrect or degrading. And so if we as parents decide to be silent just out of discomfort, or I'm not sure what to say, or I don't want to say the wrong thing, or like, oh, so icky, or whatever
ignore.
Mm-hmm. We're essentially just kind of raising a white flag and saying, I can't talk about this, but you know what? Just kind of figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Mary Flo, you've been doing this for 30 years. Have you seen, being out on the front lines, have you seen a change? Has technology changed this?
Everything has dropped. It's like someone opened the elevator door and we just fell down into it, because things that we used to talk to parents about in those preteen years is now what you need to be talking to your third grader about. So because of screens and because of access to so many things, you need to get ahead of it and you need to get in front of it. And we talk about the danger of screens, but we don't present that as like your hair's on fire danger, but talk about it in a very matter-of-fact way where we say, just like you do with the oven in the kitchen, we don't say, oh my goodness, there's a machine in here, or there's something in here and it gets really hot and you could burn yourself, you could die. We don't talk, we just say, let's be careful around the stove because I've got some fire here. Or all the things that you talk about when they're outside, you know, you have to, you know, just let them know this is how to be careful. And so mom's going to put in the code for to open the screen, because we just don't want to accidentally come upon some pictures that would not be a good thing to see. So you just start really young. And that's the other thing. If you're going to be the parent that Megan was just talking about, start with the seeds and the eggs. Be the parent that has always been the one that is kind of introducing this topic, being as comfortable as you can with the topic. And I think it's even important to say, honey, this is not a comfortable topic for me because my parents never talked to me about this, or these things didn't exist when I was growing up. So be patient with me, because as I talk about it, I'm going to get more information. So I'm going to have to come back to you with an update, you know, and but I want you to be able to come to me. And in the meanwhile, I'll try to become more of an expert. I would say that the topics are in the preschool years are, and it's like the biology is the same. A lot of it is the same, but the culture is different. You really need, as a parent, if you're going to be confident to speak up, you know, about the culture, you need to know, well, where do I stand that's different than the culture? And you need to be very clear about it. That's one of the things we have in our discussion guide is, what is the message you want your kids to have about sex if they're growing up in your family? And to really develop that into just like one sentence. This is the main thing that we need to focus on if we're going to teach our kids about sex. And there's a whole process you can go through. And then that gives you confidence. This is, we're being proactive here. We're going in this direction in our family. And you're going to hear other things in the culture, but this is the way we want you to go.
I think it would facilitate a lot of discussions too around technology use. And one of the thoughts that I have swirling around in my head is, and I've actually always thought this when I learned about those seventh graders, is I thought about just the immense pressure that you already have as a teen or a preteen. And to throw that in the mix, to know that that's going on, to know that these other kids in your class have seen you in these intimate situations. And I think as a society, where we stand is that there is actually a lot of power in one family making a change. Because if you make a change for your child, that can start to permeate out. I mean, it needs to happen. It's a cultural issue that these kids are inundated with this stuff at school. And it's very hard, I think, to push back against that tide. And so this is a really powerful message that kids are being exposed to things so young and having to grapple with. I mean, I remember thinking, like, you know, I don't know, when I was growing up, like, kids wore colored jeans. I mean, I just didn't have that many types of things. And I felt so uncomfortable not having this name brand thing. And now it's like, oh, well, wait a minute. There's this additional pressure that's so intense and has so many long-term ramifications. So I just think what you're talking about is critically important for families.
On weekends, we're typically off on another adventure. Whether it's a scenic hike or a quaint town visit, I keep my Vessies with me because they effortlessly adapt to every twist and turn, ensuring comfort and style in our sometimes spontaneous escapades. Whether it's with the kids or just my husband and me, which is pretty rare, I love stepping into a great outdoor adventure with Vessies Storm Burst boots to capture the beauty of springtime landscapes. Their robust style is perfect for our nature excursions, adding a little dash of elegance to our outdoor explorations. The Vessie collection caters to every style. Whether you're dressing up for a night out or gearing up for a weekend hike, these shoes seamlessly blend into your wardrobe while offering the practicality of waterproof footwear. Ready to refresh your spring wardrobe? Vessie has you covered with footwear that fuses style with practicality. Head over to Vessie.com/outside to explore their versatile collection and automatically claim your 15% discount on your first order upon checkout. That's Vessie.com/outside for 15% off your first order.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Can we just talk about some logistics? So your online course is available. I feel like it's very reasonably priced on your website, which is birds-bees.com. And you offer what I thought was really neat. You also offer it for groups. There's a group pricing rate. So, you know, I loved MOPS and they just changed to MOMCO, but actually that would be a great time to take a course like this, right? Because you're getting out ahead of it a little bit and you can have discussions within your table group about how different people might approach that. So you have that as well, birds-bees.com. There's freebies there too. Tell us about the website a little bit.
So it's essentially pointing you to the online course, which you just mentioned. And that is really, we say this, I feel like often, but it's our most comprehensive resource. And so from start to finish, we walk you through our six-step strategy. Mary Flo's teaching, I'm teaching. And it's very easy to digest, I would say, but a ton of information. And we kind of walk you through the preschool to preteen years of how to become this proactive parent and how to engage with your child. And so our website will walk you through that. And then to your point, what you just said about MOPS, that is exactly what the large group is for. And before we really shifted to such an online model, I feel like we did MOPS groups all the time.
Yes.
I love MOPS groups personally and professionally because they're just a great group. That is our target audience, really, because I think these moms that are preschool kids and, you know, obviously if you're homeschooling all along, it's different. But if you're not in a home traditional homeschool situation, then those preschool years are so special because the kids are with you all the time. And you have that time with them where it's twofold. It's like they're very young and they're with you and they're asking you the questions and they're believing everything you say. So it's like a win-win. And so even simple things, and this is what makes me think of your work too, is just this concept of seeds and eggs. You know, you're out in the backyard and even if you don't have this like farmland, you know, it doesn't always, I am a big fan of your podcast personally, and I live in a big city and my kids go to public school, you know? So I think I love how you share your vision and mission for being outside in nature and all that, but it's not limited to people that homeschool and live on a farm. Like, right. That's not my reality. But I think parents are encouraged by everything you share, you know, in this world too, to be like, okay, how can I invest in my, you know, outside life in 1,000 hours in my big city life? Anyways, so seeds, even if you have a big garden in the backyard or you have a little pot, you know, that you're putting in your kitchen or in the backyard with the, you know, seed packet from the grocery store, and just inviting your child in a purposeful conversation to cultivate a fascination with the way things grow. You know, look at these teeny tiny seeds. Wow. Isn't it amazing that these little seeds create new life? You know, and what you're doing is just laying a foundation for future conversations about human reproduction, because that also involves seeds and eggs. And so that MOPS group age is really a very powerful one, because you can lay such a solid foundation and at the same time, as a parent, grow confident. Oh, wow. I just said, oh, that's your penis. That's a private part. And maybe the first time I said that word, I wanted to like cringe and have a rash all over my face. But after I said that a couple of times, I got more confident with it. And so it's a great learning curve, I think, time for parents and kids.
Exactly. So that large group is a good thing because then you also do it within community.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. You kind of hold each other accountable. What message did y'all come up with? Or, you know, guess what we did the other day? Instead of throwing the apple core away, we opened it up and give each other ideas. So I think that's, you're right. Like that's why we offer it to the larger group.
Mm-hmm. And we always say the tough stuff of parenting doesn't have to be done alone. You know, so do it with your co-op, do it with your small group at church, do it with the first grade moms, have them over. Because I think it really is helpful to hear this message and really kind of think, okay, we can do this. And it is powerful to do it with other people.
And the single model, not the large group, we tell people, please invite your friends over and you have full access, you know, unlimited access. So if you watch it and you think, this is great, I wish my kids' friends' mothers, like we would all just be on board, we'll have them over. As long as you're showing it in your home, you can use that single one also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what an awesome opportunity to do that way or to do it as a group. And I think, too, it would facilitate conversations long term about phone usage and about what are we giving our kids and is it worth it to maybe start with something like a Gab phone or something that doesn't have those capabilities. I love that there's so many options out there now. I'm sure that there's even more than Gab wireless, but give kids, they use the word training wheels. And I think that's what you've been talking about the whole time, Megan, is like, it's really this growth process for both the child and the parent. Getting outside is the same way. It's like this trade-off of trust and trade-off of growth. And we're handing over decision-making to our kids as they get older and we're learning to let go a little bit. And so what a great idea to start the discussions really young when you've got really young kids to think about it, to think about how you're going to say things, to think long-term. I love the idea of doing it as a community, because then you have those discussions people talk about, and we're a little bit in this spot in Mary Flo, I think you would probably relate, that when your kids are little, it's really easy to talk about potty training, and it's really easy to talk about first steps and teething and these sort of more innocuous things that tend to be, you know, typical in the course of early childhood. But as your kids get older, a lot of times things turn more private, even just for the sake of that particular child. Mm-hmm. And so I like that we have maybe a small community where we have people that we can trust and talk to about certain issues, about what we're experiencing as we enter into these middle school years. Mary Flo, have you found that to be the case? Like, as kids get older, we tend to maybe shut in a little bit more with what we share out of respect for our own children and what they're going through, and also just because it's awkward?
Yes, I think that's true. I think one thing that can be helpful for parents is to have really trusted friends with children about 3 to 5 years older than you, and maybe even a little bit older, that you go out to dinner with them and you say, what are you seeing? What do you wish you'd known before that we could start doing now? That if you can cultivate some people in your world, that I know our daughters have friends within their church with older kids, and they observe what they feel like is a really positive way to do it. One thing that they learned is to have our grandchildren don't have iPhones, but their friends do. But when they come over to their house, it's like a phone basket. Okay, all the phones go in the basket, and they serve them some really fun snacks, and that causes them to talk to each other mm-hmm. and not to be on their phone. It's a non-judgmental, okay, everybody, phone's in the basket. Here you go. Here's something really yummy to eat. And that has been kind of and I feel like when I'm with them, the kids really respect that and that they enjoy it. They like someone telling them, okay, you're done now with the phone and you're going to talk to your friends. Mm-hmm. So just little bitty things like that, that you learn by having parents who are a little bit older. Mm-hmm. But yes, they do get a little bit more private. But if they do have those families that they hang out with the older kids, they have living examples. Do you see how awesome that was that they were able to talk about that? Or do you see how, gosh, I bet they regret that. And so you just get to see a little bit before it happens in your own family.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting path. We were at a restaurant, it's just at Panera. It actually was a few years ago. And I was with my kids, and there was a young couple there. So our kids are teens now, down to 7. And there was a young couple in Panera that had 2, maybe 3, maybe they had 3 pretty young kids. And you're kind of transported back to how difficult that was. And, you know, the kids and, you know, they're kind of rambunctious and they got ones in high chairs. And anyway, we noticed that none of them were on a phone. The parents were not on a phone. And all they did was talk to their kids. And it was one of those things that was striking mm-hmm. because it was so different than the norm. And so we had a whole conversation about it with our own kids. We went and talked to the family about it and just said it was such a cool example.
Yes.
As our kids are teens and maybe a decade away from being parents themselves in this sort of middle gap, you know, to say, hey, look, there's another way that you can do it. And look how engaged the kids mm-hmm. are. Look how happy the family looks. All of those types of things. And so I love that thought of noticing what other people do. And it is so powerful to be the family with the phone basket. I don't think I can say that loudly enough, that kids are really struggling. Mm-hmm. And so you really make a difference, you and your one particular home, mm-hmm. when you do things like that, because kids learn and they have opportunity to be themselves without being worried that they're going to be videotaped. And all of those things that come along with social media and phone and just the presence of that. My daughter, who's 14, is reading a book called 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You. Wow. And one of the chapters is about basically like, this is not how we're meant to live. We're meant to live like when we're in person, we're meant to be in person and not communicating with someone somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this whole thing. And so she was talking to me about it and I was like, well, sure. Yeah. So I love these ideas from both of you. And I think these conversations come up. I mean, they can stem from birds and bees. They can stem mm-hmm. from these things because pornography is a part of that and the phone use is in the technology. So it's all incredibly important. You say the talk is outdated, and maybe we've already covered this, you know, because it's one singular talk, or is there more to it than why the talk is outdated?
I would say it is outdated. I would agree with that. And I think to kind of bridge the conversation we just had to this one we're about to have, I would say a word that kind of keeps sticking out to me is countercultural. And I think that's something that with your work too, I feel like it is kind of countercultural. Like you're just pushing back a little bit and kind of saying, hey, I don't know about this anymore. You know, I think naturally kind of go with the flow and all of a sudden kind of stand up and be like, I don't know if I like where we are. And so I think pushing back to be outside, pushing back to be a parent who's going to speak into certain topics, you know, pushing back about the cell phone use. You know what? In our house, we put the phones in the basket. This is what we're doing. And just kind of not being afraid to be a parent that's going to be countercultural, because you can see the bigger picture, you know, and you kind of have a bigger vision for your family. You know, this is not in line with where we want to go as a family. And so I think the talk kind of goes back to that, where an awkward conversation at an awkward age is not very effective. You know, by then, if you have said nothing until 13 or 14, 12 or 13, whatever, I mean, that's just uncomfortable on your best day. Not many 12 or 13 year olds are feeling like their best selves. And then for mom or dad to come in and tell you every single thing and mechanic about sex that you didn't ever want to know, I mean, that's just not a good conversation. And I think even from just like a practical point of view, if a parent child had a conversation of like, sweetheart, come sit down, I want to talk to you about something really important. Well, that just makes me feel uncomfortable saying it, you know, or something. You know, we're going to have a big weekend and it's just going to be you and me. And we're going to talk about so many fun things, you know. It's kind of like, oh gosh, okay, that is a lot, a lot, you know. But if we kind of just teach kids, I mean, it's like your faith, you know. You don't have one big summit when they're 13 and tell them all about what the Bible says. It's no, you do this like little by little. We do that with manners, you know. You don't have a big summit at 13, and I mean, maybe you do, but it's like all along you've kind of taught them in age appropriate ways. This is how we teach big important things. And so why wouldn't we do the same with sex? And so the talk is outdated, and not necessarily from a fear-based point of like, you got to get ahead of this. It's, you know, it's really bad. It's more of like, no, it just makes so much more sense. If this is something that you respect, if sex is something that you view as something that is important to their lifelong journey and something that should have reverence, whatever level that is to you, then treat it with care. And start engaging in these little conversations so they have a picture of what it is and you can actually see, oh, that's not what it's not. And I feel like those conversations build over time, and a one and done conversation at a really painful time is just not a good way to digest information. Yes,
exactly. Exactly. And I do think we have a beautiful story to tell. We forget that this is a good thing. And if we show reverence for it, if we show the respect that it is due, then that gets communicated in a lot of little conversations, and that can happen. And so we talk about the beauty of God's design, if you want to incorporate your faith, but then we talk about the boundaries. And as they get a little bit older, we incorporate the boundaries. And then as they get a little bit older, we talk about the brokenness that is around us. So we can move out, but if you start with the beauty, then I think we can make it a topic that doesn't seem scary or icky or any of the things that people associate with it.
Mm-hmm. It's a good foundation, because if the families that are listening, they're getting their kids outside, you're going to see stuff and your kids are going to have questions. So you might as well take the course so you know what to do. I know it comes with a 40-page discussion guide, Birds and Bees Takes Flight. So you've got this discussion guide and you can work through it. And so you just have, you've got something there for the topic is going to come up. If you're spending time outside, it comes up because kids see stuff and then they have questions. And it's really a good gateway into talking about sex, into talking about these different topics. I had a friend who got married in her later 20s. I think she was 28. And she said the week of her wedding, her mom took her out and had the talk. Yes. And she was like, mom.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. So it's like, that's the opposite end of the spectrum. Okay. So we're talking about age here. And I know, you know, it's like we live in an age where things are so chaotic. There's this guy, John Acuff. He writes these fantastic books, but he says, he's an entrepreneur, and he says, I actually, as an adult, he says, I love to do Legos because I just like the concrete nature of that. Like where my life, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. So it's like all these things, you could do this, you could do that. And it's chaotic and confusing. He says, but you know, give me a little Lego book and I can build something from start to finish. And I don't have to like put in any extra thought. And I think we live in a world, because things are so chaotic, that we do like these concrete answers.
Right.
So one of the things that people ask you a lot is, tell me the age. Yeah. Like, I want to know the exact age. But you say there's a lot of factors there, depending on birth order and that type of thing. So can you unpack that a little bit?
Sure.
Go for it.
Okay. So
I can do it if you want to.
Yeah, no, we can both do it. Okay. So the reason why we say that we don't give you an exact age is because you might have a firstborn six-year-old who lives in a six-year-old world, and nothing in his world goes beyond the horizon of 6 years old. But he becomes friends with another six-year-old who is the youngest of four. And that youngest of four, six-year-old, lives in a 16-year-old world because, like, you have young ones, you have teenagers, you just know they get different exposure, even if it's nothing bad, it's just different elements of life. And so we say, you know, you have to take all that into consideration when you think about, when should I bring this up? For your firstborn, if you think, well, they're not ready, they may not be ready within your home, but they're getting exposure. So if, unless you want that child sitting, that's sitting next to your six-year-old firstborn to be the informant, then you need to know that it's going to happen really in the first and second grade. They're going to be hearing things. So,
and I think that's important to, we kind of encourage parents to shift their quote, the question, you know, the main question is when's the perfect time? And the main shift should be, instead of when is the perfect age, we want you to really think a step back and say, well, who do you want to tell them? You know, because that's so, you can't say six, because just to Mary Flo's point, what life was like for my firstborn at six is so vastly different than my baby right now, who's five. I should lock him up. Like, he should not be around other people because he is just different, you know, personality, but also he's doing 10-year-old stuff. It's just different. He's at the dinner table with us.
Yes, you know, exactly. You can't lock
him up. You cannot hone in on an age because that's not accurate. But what we can hone in on is the power of the first impression. And that is what we really want parents to kind of take back is, do you want to be, like, who wants to tell them? Do you want to be the loving authority in your child's life on this topic? Then start talking. A phrase that we say a lot, which I think is really freeing, is that ignorance is not the same as innocence. Because I think so often parents are afraid to take away their child's innocence by telling them some information at a young age. But the reality is, and we're not saying you have to spell out intercourse to a five-year-old. That is not what we're saying. So nobody, like, panic here. But what we are saying is you can have some really factual and honest conversation. Oh yeah, a baby is born. You know, baby's actually inside mommy's uterus, not of tummy, you know, or a baby comes through the uterus, you know, out the uterus, through the birth canal, out the mother's vagina, and the baby's born. Isn't that amazing? What a miracle is the story of birth. Okay, you might be sitting here listening and be like, oh my God, I can't believe we just said that. But that's not a bad thing. And I think we have to remind ourselves that, like, that information did not take away the innocence of a five-year-old. You know, in a way, information from mom or dad, information from somebody who loves them the most, actually protects them. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take away their innocence. It actually, in a way, creates this pattern of trust and communication between parent and child. And it protects their little brains with information that you want them to have, not what somebody else says. Because when they're young and something comes in their little brain that isn't what you said, they react in the, nah, that's not what my mom said.
She doesn't already know about
that. Yeah, she didn't lie.
Yeah.
Okay, they, like, root for us. When they're 13 or 14, they're probably like, yeah, my mom doesn't know anything. But when they're young, they believe what we say. And so just to kind of remind you that these conversations aren't bad. These conversations will not take away their innocence. And to really, this might seem backwards for a lot of people, but to view this as a privilege, you know, not I have to talk to my kids about sex. It's like, I get to shape their understanding of what this is. I get to help them understand what healthy boundaries look like and what screens can do. Screens are a good thing, but we have to be careful with them. The beauty of birth, private parts and body boundaries, that is so important to drill into your kids at young ages to keep them safe. You know, these are not bad things, but we don't need to be gray about it. Yep, you have a vagina, that's a private part. Nobody else can look at that or touch that. Mm-hmm. And these are matter-of-fact phrases we're saying in ways that aren't scary, in ways that aren't gross or icky, but just it is what it is, and these are the lines, and this is not crossed. Ultimately, what we really want to empower parents to do is just kind of have this tone in their home of, like, this is something we talk about in our home. And we start young, and we keep talking. If you have questions, come to me. We know what we're talking about, and this is always going to be a safe place for you to come with your questions.
But we also tell them, because this is another fear that parents have, is if I tell my kids, oh my goodness, we'll never be in another friend group. Because so you also,
it's like Santa, like if you tell your kid, yeah.
And so warning, but so you do establish that this is a parent-child conversation. Hmm. Like, can come and we can talk about this. So other parents get to talk to their kids on this topic. And this is not something you need to discuss at school, because other parents have the privilege of talking to their own children. So that's one of the other boundaries that you kind of set up, is that this is a parent-child conversation.
Oh, I've never heard that, Mary Flo. That is so interesting. What? It's the same with Santa.
It is the same. Right?
And with siblings too, that can also be with siblings. You know, like my oldest and I kind of had this conversation this season of like, you know what, but this is something fun that we're going to do with your brothers. You know, hope no one's listening now, but, you know, and not making this huge big thing. And we don't need to dive into a do you, don't you Santa conversation because that can get very heated, I feel like.
People are very opinionated about that.
Very much.
That's fine.
But it's like, this is between us, you know, and I will answer. You can always come to me and dad. We'll always talk to you. We know a lot about this topic, but it's not your job to go tell your brothers or sisters or friends at school.
But sometimes that's why parents are afraid to talk. Mm-hmm. They think, you know, uh-oh, you know, this is going to lead to other things I don't want to talk about. So, yeah, but you can establish that boundary so easily.
Yeah, that's really practical. I love the practical things.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking
it. I'd heard one time to tell your kids not to look at other people's phones. And I thought that was really practical. I would have never thought to say that. Like, you know, you're with your whoever, family members, doesn't matter. You know, don't peek over and look at what they're looking at. Just let it be. And so I love all of this practical stuff. And what an amazing option for a course. I know it has an optional faith lesson. So it could go either way. Like if you want this from a Christian worldview, that's an option. But also you can just take that session out if you're just looking for it in a different way. And once again, you can find it at birds-bees.com. It really makes you think of different things. Like I had a friend who was pregnant and she had a four-year-old, and the four-year-old would always say, the baby is in my mother's uterus. Yeah. You know, isn't it a great thing?
It's true. We're trying to take the babies out of the digestive system and put them into the reproductive system. Like you're in the wrong system over there. Yeah. Daddy's got a tummy. He doesn't have a baby. We've made that so complicated by talking about the tummy. No, it's not in the tummy. That's where the cheeseburgers go. So there's nothing wrong with the uterus. It's very special. And yeah, we want to give it its credit.
And we just have to remind parents sometimes, like, uterus is not a bad word. Mm-hmm. You know, it really isn't. And if it's very difficult for you to spit out, you know, we offer the word womb. It's softer to say. It's one syllable. It's in the Bible for those that want that. You know, it's like, but kind of either or, it's not in their tummy. You know?
No matter where it is, it's not in the tummy. And so we're taking babies out of the tummies and into the uterus.
Uterus, y'all. It's not bad.
You have, if people are interested, you have a free download on your website, 4 tips for talking about the birds and the bees. And it's beautiful. And I think it's designed really well. And they're really good tips in there, these first 4 tips. I think it's a cool entry point for someone to say, okay, I want to know a little bit more about this. And it's a light sense. It's beautiful and it's easy. So it gives you a little sense of what the course would be like. And so if people are interested, it's like, it gives the tone a little bit of what you're doing and what this feels like. And so I love that people can go on the website and find that 4 tips about talking about the birds and the bees. And that's a downloadable that people can check out. Pornography is obviously a huge change, I guess, in the last 30 years. I mean, obviously there's always been, but this access to it is different. And so can you give us, I know we're near the end of time here, but 9 out of 10 boys are exposed to pornography in their childhood. 9 out of 10, 90% between the ages of 8 and 18. What should we be doing about this?
Help. And I think just reflecting on what Mary Flo said earlier of just engaging these conversations, a statistic we have on our website that I'm sure people have heard from all different sources, but is that the average age of first exposure is 11. And that's very, very young. And so I think twofold, we always say we want parents to be aware and to be prepared and not just scared. So I think so often parents hear this information and their instinct is like, oh, I don't want to hear it. It's just too dark. It's very upsetting information. So our temptation is to just kind of stick our heads in the sand and think, not us, not my kids. This is so bad. But that's not very helpful. And so we really encourage parents to like, listen up. This is true. This is the reality in which we live. And so be mindful of that. To kind of repeat what Mary Flo said earlier is then we need to engage, you know, pornography is a danger in our child's life. Just in the fact that cars in the street are a hot stove, the swimming pool or the in the backyard or whatever it is, it's like be mindful of that, climbing trees, whatever it is, there are risks in their life. We don't avoid talking about those, but we talk about them in age-appropriate ways and we talk about them often. Don't shy away is what we're saying. You know, the little kid who's 4, oh, mommy's going to, you know, hold the remote control because we got to be really careful with what we see. And then we kind of have this idea of simple phrases and you don't say that once. You know, you don't say that one time, say it over on Christmas morning when you're going to your sister's house because the cousins might have gotten iPads for Christmas that are older. Okay, guys, remember every family's going to have different screen rules. We got to be really careful with what we see on screens. If you see something that makes your tummy hurt or kind of is too scary to look at or a picture of private parts, remember, guys, we never look at private parts. If you see anything like that, come and tell me. You know, we are just going ahead of all of these conversations. My kids and my older kids now are at this age where they're going to friends' houses without me. You know, and like I'm dropping them off or they're going home with so-and-so or whatever. So it's a little bit of that kind of what you were saying, that gray zone of parenting where not everything's black and white and it's not.
I don't see it all.
Yeah. And it's not like, oh, here's how you potty train. Here's how you sleep train. Here's how you eat vegetables. It's kind of like, well, I think this feels like a good decision today. I trust this. You know, you're just making decisions. And so at a certain point, all you can really do is have internal filters with your children. You know, there are so many websites that will tell you about external filters and Covenant Eyes or Apple Protection, whatever. There's lots of things you need to protect your screens from bad pictures. But we also have got, as parents, it's our job to build up these internal filters for our young kids. Mm-hmm. Hey, go to so-and-so's house. I would love it if y'all played outside and didn't touch any screens. Okay, mm-hmm. That's my preference. But if you do see something on a screen that you know you're not supposed to watch or something that you know you think is inappropriate, you need, what are we going to do? I want you to say, hey, let's go play outside. Or I don't want to watch this anymore. Or, you know, you have to build resilient children. You know, we can't just bubble wrap them and think, oh, don't ever do that. Or we don't have screens ever.
Or I hope it doesn't happen, but I'm not going to do anything about it.
Yeah, I'm just afraid.
I'm just going to hope. Let's just hope it turns out okay. You do have to build up that resistance and you need to give them words to say with their friends. Mm-hmm. Just exactly what Megan just said. If this happens, so don't act like it could never happen. It could happen. So if it does, teach them card tricks. You know, I know that's a silly thing, but to say, do you have any cards? I want to teach you this. You know, just let them know some fun things they could do, you know, that they could not just say, I need to not watch this. Mm-hmm. I'm not allowed to watch this. Yeah, let's go outside.
Or
birds or, you know,
give them a diversion. Give them a diversion. Yes. That's brilliant. There's a couple of things that we're so close to being out of time, but there's a couple of things that you said, Meg. Oh, I love this idea of a diversion. That's brilliant. And it just hones in on like, let's do hands-on things. Like, let's know how to do hands-on things. Send your girls with crafts, like send them with a skein of yarn and they can finger knit or whatever. You've got this diversion. But Megan, you said two things. One is the repetitive. And as a teacher, I repeated every single thing 3 times to high schoolers.
Oh, yeah.
So I would get up and you're going to give the lesson or whatever it is, whatever the kids need to do. You're playing a game 3 times. I had to do it 3 times every day. I mean, every day I would get up in front of my class every day and I would be like, let me remind you what the handbook says the rules are. And I mean, I did it because they needed to know, like, you know, if you're supposed to have your pencils out, you need to have your pencils out. We're not going to have a power struggle over this. This is just what the rules are. So that repetitive thing, I think, is so important. And you brought up pornography in the frame of risk. I've never thought about it that way. But risk is this combination of how dangerous something is Mm-hmm. In combination with how likely it is to happen. And so that's a really a good lens to look at it as risk, because how dangerous is it? Very. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think learning about that is important, that we don't have time to go into that. But and how likely is it to happen? 90%.
Yeah.
So is this a big risk in the life of your child? Yes. Just like, you know, playing by a busy street with a, you know, a soccer ball. So I like the way that you frame that. And I think it's a really good way to put it and to give people perspective on looking at it that way, as opposed to I'm scared, so I'm just going to ignore it. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't do that with other things, right?
Right.
We wouldn't be like, oh, it's so scary. That road is so scary. So I'm just going to let my toddler play and ignore it. No, right. Yeah. We wouldn't do that.
They can dodge.
With toddlers, you know, you say, how many times do you say, you know, be careful with that stove, or hold my hand, we're crossing the street. Hold my hand, we're crossing the street. Don't go, like,
cars can't see you.
Multiple times a day. And so I think just to retrain your brain, if this is a danger in their life, repeat, repeat, repeat.
Mm-hmm. I love it. We have 1 minute. So you each have 30 seconds to share a favorite memory from your childhood that was outside, and go.
Okay. Well, we lived in a neighborhood in El Paso. I grew up in El Paso, and at the park, all the kids would go and play. It was just like the whole neighborhood ran there after you'd come home, do your homework, run to the park. But just like your book, there were lights at the park, the street lights. And every parent, it was just amazing, but it would be like when the lights come on, everyone knew you had to be at home by that time. So when I saw the title to your book, that reminded me of many, many childhood memories. Climbing trees there, playing on the playground, tag, you know, just all the running around that we did. It was great.
I love that.
I have many, many memories outside. I think one that comes to me is I was in fifth grade, and we had like this big bush thing outside our house, and I kind of would crawl inside of it and made like a little escape. And I remember feeling maybe a tad too old to do these kind of things, but it was such a respite for me in my new little tweeny world. And I would go there after school. I had like a journal I would write in. I think I brought like a butter knife from the kitchen, like whittle something. And I just remember like, and this again, we are big city people, so this is like not the norm, but I just remember finding such respite in that little space that was kind of just mine outside. But also feeling that, you know, pull of like, I think I'm too old to kind of be doing this, but I enjoyed
just
so it.
Comforting.
Yeah, the nature was just like such a comfort to me. And so I have many memories outside growing up, but that is one that really stuck with me of like, it provided such a safe place.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful stories. I love it. Birds-bees.com and on Instagram, birds_bees. And that's where they're going to find you. Thank you so much. It's such an important topic, and I so appreciate you both taking the time to be here.
Thank
you're
you, Jenny.
You're so welcome, Jenny. It was a treat to visit
so
with you.
So treat. Yes, exactly.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.